Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
Tired. End of a long week.
Yeah.
But so excited.
We've been just prepping for this episode.
Since I saw this on Friday the 13th.
In a minute, we'll get into how you saw this in the context of what was happening. But yeah, it's the end of the long week. It's a Friday. We're recording in the evening, which is not typical for us.
Yeah, we're usually morning girls. So, yeah. You know, the energy feels a little crazy.
Crazy?
A little wacky? It's because we're recording at night.
Yeah. We're loosey-goosey.
We're not freshly awake. We're not freshly have woken up 20 minutes ago to do this.
Yeah. So today we're obviously talking about Skinamarink.
A movie that you've either never heard of or never seen.
Yeah, right? How many people will have seen this movie?
Well,
unknown.
It's possible that one of two things is going to happen. This is going to get no listens because right. No one's going to have seen this.
Yeah.
Or every person that's ever seen this is going to listen to this episode.
We love the latter, obviously,
but the former
is probably the more likely one.
Yeah, it's not a lot of people, but it's more people than usual.
Right. Yeah, that's what happened with Promising Young Woman.
We think.
I don't know.
We have no clue. Maybe the algorithm just thought we were hot that day.
I think we're hot every day.
Aw. Tell that to the algorithm.
It knows all.
Yeah. Why think? We just let the algorithm
do it for us.
All right. I'm so excited.
Yeah, tell me how you came across this movie.
Yes. So I was scrolling through r-Tulsa.
Okay.
Where I live.
Jesus.
And I was looking for mentions of a restaurant that I couldn't remember the name of enough to Google.
Classic.
I thought maybe people on Reddit would have posted about it.
Mm.
I didn't find that restaurant name. But what I did find instead was a movie that had a creepy-ass poster. It looked scary. And it said that this indie movie theater inside Tulsa was going to be showing this cult classic movie called Skinamarink. And I was like, wow, I've never heard of this. How have I never heard of this? It looks bizarre.
Yeah.
It looks really scary. And it's a cult classic. Like, this feels like something one of us would know about.
Right. We're pretty big horror fans. I feel like we would have known about this.
Yeah. I did go see it that night on Friday the 13th with my little brother. I took him. And I will say, only after the fact did I learn that that was the premiere. So
it's a preemptive cult classic.
It felt soon to call it a cult classic, considering it hadn't even been possible for people to watch it before that time.
Seems a little bold, doesn't it?
Seems bold. It seems like some marketing shit that you just try to pull when you know no one's going to be smart enough to know either way.
No one's going to check.
And so I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I've never heard of this. But as soon as I watched it, I immediately texted Jane and was like, I doubt you're going to find a theater that's showing this near you.
Yeah.
But you must get to this movie as soon as possible. This is a Shudder original. Is
yes.
It not Shudder? Well, I mean, Shudder bought it.
Yes.
Or owns it.
No. Shudder produced it and okay. Is now streaming it. I believe they produced it and they are like put
Who
money behind it.
Who does this fucking guy know? I mean, they said 15 grand. Sure.
Sure. Make your little movie.
Make your little movie, bitch. We'll make that back in advertisement. We'll make that back by calling it a cult classic horror film.
Just tricking people into
Only
coming.
Only available on Shudder, you stupid whores.
You're so stupid.
That's me.
But yeah, I watched it on Shudder.
Yes.
And I think that from what you've told me, I really should have seen it in theaters.
But, you know, I think it's kind of nice because we now get to watch this movie from the perspective of people who are going to get to watch it in theaters.
Right.
Which is going to be a different experience, but the more true experience is going to be that of watching it at home.
The more likely experience.
Yeah, the experience that everyone listening to this is probably going to have is watching it at home. And it's...
It was different.
Yes. Okay, I will also say I'm in the theater, right? It's packed. This is a packed house. My brother's been to this theater many times. He said, I've never seen this many people inside one of these theaters.
Whoa.
It's a packed house. And the guy comes in, he's like, hey, thanks for coming. We're super excited about this movie. You know, it's really experimental. So we're glad you guys are here because it's definitely you've definitely never seen it.
And were you just like gripping the
seat?
I was
like, what does that mean?
Just vaguely like prep.
And by the end, I knew what it meant.
Yeah.
I was like, so that's what they meant? I thought I was going to get, there's a great musical. Well, I don't know that I call it great. There's a musical.
Well, wait, I'll backtrack.
I'll backtrack. Interesting. An interesting musical called Shock-Headed Peter, which I believe I've probably shown you because...
Yeah, I think we actually might have watched together in a theater appreciation class.
Yes. Yes. This is a thing that fundamentally altered me as a human, and it's a musical by this band called Tiger Lily, which I believe does, like, like, I don't know what to call the music that they do. They play a lot of accordion, and they sing, like, really high. And
it's like Tiny Tim level stuff.
It's Tiny Tim level. Whatever that music is, that's what they do. Yes, this is what they do. And it's a musical of an old German children's storybook. And it's, like, just the most fucked up, disturbing shit you've ever seen in your goddamn life. Under the most horrifying score you can imagine. And when they filmed it like they were filming an MTV Real World episode. And it's fucking horrible. And this felt like I wish I had been watching that in the theater.
Oh.
Like, ooh. I would have given anything to see that day. This, like... You've seen Too Many Cooks.
Of course. Of course I've seen Too Many Cooks.
I wish, like, Too Many Cooks had a greater cultural impact than this movie is going to have.
I agree.
By a lot.
It definitely takes up more space in my mind.
Yeah. This has been taking up a lot of space in my mind, mainly because I feel like I couldn't talk to anyone about it.
Right. Yeah, this movie, it's like a cult in that it like isolates you from everyone you know.
In the way that I want to force it on people so I'm not so alone. Okay. How to describe this movie? Usually, you know, we get into the plot.
Right.
You might be wondering, when are they going to get into the plot and crack their little sodas? No sodas today, friends. Because this is a plotless movie.
Yes, there's nothing.
That's not us being facetious. That's not us dragging the plot.
No.
This is a literal movie that has no plot.
It seems to be a plot device to have no plot.
Yeah, this is more of a plot in real life than it is in the movie.
Right.
And I would say, so I guess the basis of the film... Yeah. Or the premise, if you will. Yeah, premise.
And the setting, yeah.
The premise of the film is a 4-year-old named Kevin and a 6-year-old named Kaylee wake up at 3 a.m. and there are no doors and no windows to their house. And their there parents. Are no parents there.
Yeah.
Their parents are gone. And there's no doors and no windows, so they can't get out. And that is the premise of the film. Now, I actually can't take you through a shot-by-shot basis of this movie because that would be impossible.
And it would be tedious.
It would be tedious. What you need to know is for about 20 minutes, you get establishing shots of a home.
You get a lot of those.
Of the
if
same
If you came
home.
For establishing shots...
Yeah, imagine you go to someone's 600-square-foot apartment and they made you go on a 20-minute tour.
So this is the corner of this bedroom.
I really like this one. So you can just look at it for 10 seconds.
So just stare at this corner. Oh, look at that door frame.
Now that corner actually is interesting because that one's different. And you're going to want to remember that. But then in the back, but then it's also filmed like Ghost Adventure.
Yeah, and it's just like, shh.
Yeah, and then the background noise, the soundscape. Imagine if your white noise machine was playing as you go to sleep at night.
And then just these kids whispering for the most part.
It's all whispering.
And only sometimes do they have subtitles.
It's meant to throw you off.
Okay, that's like this whole movie.
It's just to throw you off your rhythm.
Now you're throwing him off his rhythm.
That's exactly how I felt.
He really got us. If that's what he was wanting, he really did throw us off our rhythm.
Really off my rhythm. this is, so like, 20 minutes establishing shots. Then, there's a phone that rings, and you're like, we're definitely getting into it now.
Yes.
You hear something, it sounds promising, sounds like something's gonna happen. An accident? A father? A missing mom? Well, go ahead and just forget about that, because it will not come back.
It's never coming back, so you need to let it go.
It's not important at all. And if you're holding on to that till the hour 30-minute mark thinking, well, this is surely where all my tiny bits of information are going to come together, just go ahead and let that dream go.
It's not coming.
It's not coming true.
Oof.
I was struggling to stay awake during this movie.
Yeah, you said you had a little beer.
I had one beer. I'd had a long day. I saw it on a weekday. I thought, what a fun thing to do. And I was like, I was literally...
Oh, was I surprised.
Nearly falling asleep in my chair. Oh, and I was so scared to fall asleep because I knew something was going to happen. And then there are about, I will say, 5 major jump scares.
Yes.
In this movie, which are genuinely terrifying.
Yes.
But in the same way that if you opened your toilet and there was a snake inside, that you would be scared because you literally did not know it was coming.
Right. There's just nothing to build up to that at all.
Yeah, it's like if you were... The best way I can put this is a movie that's like if you go into the bathroom, turn off all the lights and shut the door, and you look at your own face in the mirror for 40 minutes... You would come out feeling the same as if you watched this movie.
Absolutely.
Because you're gonna be scared. You're gonna be like a little nervous and you're not really gonna know why.
You're just gonna be disturbed.
You're gonna be really disturbed by what you saw in that bathroom. But when you come out, it's gonna be like, oh, okay. As soon as the bright light of day hits you, you have forgotten everything.
Oh my goodness. So I'm going to get into, I guess, whatever the Wikipedia is. It's not a terribly, I guess, the plot.
They added a plot?
It seems so.
That's so impressive because when I saw this on Friday the 13th, the premiere date, that night I went to go look for the plot. There was no plot
Whoa.
Tab. There was no plot tab. It was the only movie Wikipedia had ever seen without a plot tab. Someone added that since then.
Wow. Well, now there's a plot tab. That's wild. So this is a Canadian experimental horror film written and directed by Kyle Edward Ball in his feature directorial debut. And he did, I haven't seen it, but it's a 2020 short film called Heck.
Yes, that's also when he stopped working as a sales consultant.
Stop!
Whatever that was, Viacom or something.
Oh my god. Are you going to tell them what we did?
I wanted to know how old he was because I was thinking, I'm either going to be upset or I'm going to be impressed.
Right.
And it's going to depend a lot on the day of his birth.
And, to give me context for what is happening here.
And so I looked him up on the internet. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
And his IMDb does not say his age.
So I thought, well, maybe I can find him on Facebook. And I did find him on Facebook.
Oh, no.
But this is gonna not a personal, like, LinkedIn-type page. His personal, literal personal Facebook. But Kyle, Mr. Ball, doesn't have his Facebook at all private. He has about 388 friends. And tonight,
as we record this, go private.
As we record this, this is... I hope. I'm surprised he hasn't already. Okay. Tonight, he's at a festival called Dark Fest in British Columbia.
You're doxing him.
Well, this is not going out. He's going to be gone by the time this goes out. And only 39 people were interested in the event, and only 13 said they were going, which is... I was like, aw.
Oh.
Aw. In BC? Damn. And I know it feels like we're being really mean to this guy, but on the chance, the 55% chance that he listens to this podcast.
Yeah, it's higher than any director.
We, without a doubt, this is our highest opportunity of reaching the guy who made the film.
Absolutely.
I want to just say... I feel like we're being really mean.
I don't mean to be.
But it's just because we really think it's funny. And we're bitches.
See, the thing is... The thing of it is, you haven't considered the bitch of it all.
Yeah, I considered that. I think it's really funny to be mean. And, no. And I actually think this is not the worst movie I've ever seen by far.
Absolutely not. Not even the worst movie we've covered on this podcast.
No, I think that this guy that you, Mr. Ball, have really actually a lot of potential to make a very good movie. But I do not think you hit it on this one. I do not think this one was it.
I think you're capable.
I think you have the talent.
And you have very good instincts.
I just don't think that this is...
This is not it, buddy.
This was not the one. Oh, is it going to mention...
I'm not sure.
About him.
Prior to production of Skinamarink, Ball ran a YouTube channel where he would upload videos based on nightmares recounted by commenters. His 2020 short film Heck was developed as a proof of concept for Skinamarink. Skinamarink was shot on digital in Ball's childhood home in Edmonton, Canada. It premiered at the 26th Fantasia Film Festival in Montreal in 2022 and went on to screen at other film festivals, including some that offered at-home viewing options. Due to a technical issue, one of the festival platforms allowed a copy of the film to be leaked online. The film then garnered attention on social media apps and websites like TikTok, Reddit, and Twitter, where it attracted word-of-mouth acclaim. Skinamarink received a theatrical release in the United States and Canada, and then announced on Shudder.
Hold up.
What?
I paid money to see this, and it had been leaked on the internet already?
Yeah.
That's some shit.
You saw it. Oh, Allison.
I thought I was early to this.
You got conned.
I got conned.
That
Fuck
sucks.
You, Kyle.
It was a box office success, but to be
okay.
fair.
All right. That's like going to a garage sale and buying getting a really good deal on a table and calling it a box office success.
Oh, yeah. He had a $15,000 budget and made $2 million.
Okay, now $2 million for $15,000, obviously that's a really big profit margin. But also...
So good for him.
Yeah. And also, it is... We talk about it all the time, about making a movie.
Yes.
And this has really, like, pushed me...
Pushing me to the edge.
This is pushing me to the fucking edge. Like, one more thing comes out, I'm making a goddamn film.
Because I cannot anymore.
I'm mad.
Are we gonna make a movie out of spite?
Yeah, maybe. For Kyle Edward Ball? Yeah, maybe.
Our magnum opus.
Yeah, it's like he... I like what he has... It's like he's squandering talent. He just has all this talent. He's just throwing it out the window, and it's making me mad.
Yeah. You could harness that.
Yeah. You know what? Send us an email, Kyle. Let's work on it.
It received generally positive reviews from critics who characterized it as a drawing upon experiences of childhood fear, though it received a polarized response from audiences.
Yeah. As it would.
Yeah. So... And when you checked, there was no plot, but now there is a plot.
Now there is a plot.
So, in 1995, 4-year-old Kevin injures himself in what his 6-year-old sister Kaylee says is a sleepwalking incident. Kevin is then taken to a hospital and brought back home. The father calls someone and tells them that the hospital didn't need to give Kevin stitches and he only hit his head. Sometime later, the two siblings wake up in the middle of the night to find that their father has seemingly disappeared and that the windows, doors, and other objects in their house are gradually vanishing as well. Kevin suggests they sleep downstairs where they where they watch cartoons on a television. They awake to find the house still dark. They hear an unexplained thumping noise and find a chair standing upside down on the ceiling. Kevin asks Kaylee where she thinks their father is, to which she replies that she does not know. Kevin then suggests that maybe he went with mom. Yeah, we never get any kind of
yeah, we don't know what that means. Don't worry about that.
So don't worry about that. That is, it's not important.
And don't forget that we have at this point skipped 20 minutes of door work.
Oh, wow. Kevin shows Kaylee that the toilet is in the downstairs bathroom has disappeared. Kaylee accompanies Kevin to the upstairs bathroom. She sees a doll on the bedroom ceiling, and Kevin returns to tell her that he is too frightened to use the toilet. They decide to place two buckets.
See, I've done that.
I get that.
I've been too scared to pee. When I was a child, after I watched a horror movie.
Absolutely.
I was too scared to pee.
Yes. They decided to place two buckets in the downstairs bathroom. A mysterious voice calls to Kaylee from the darkness, telling her to come upstairs. And I will say, like, one of the, I guess, the more effective methods that this movie uses is, like, there's lots of shots where it's literally just staring into darkness for minutes and minutes on end, and, like, your mind starts to make things up, right?
Yeah, it is scary. And then when stuff actually is happening,
yeah,
you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, like, the chair stuff and the doll stuff is pretty creepy. Or, like,
anytime stuff does appear out of the darkness,
yeah,
it's so scary because you've looked at the darkness so many times and nothing happened. A lot of people talk about how it preys on childhood fear.
Right.
I do think it accomplishes that. Like, yeah. I will give that to him. That was my impression when I watched this movie, was it felt exactly like being a kid and looking into the darkness and being so scared something was going to come out, and then actually doing that.
Right.
And then actually making that, like, but they lull you into that sort of sense where you're like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not happened so many times. Because
it's so monotonous.
That when it does happen, you're like, wah! Yeah.
Kaylee heads upstairs while Kevin remains downstairs. In a bedroom, she sees their... This is like, oh my God. This was the most scared I was in the movie.
Yes, this was a very scary part.
Maybe because I was like...
It's a very tense part.
Yeah, it's... Ooh.
You think you're going to get jump scared.
Yeah, but you don't. It's really freaky. She sees their father, who tells her to look under the bed. She does so, but does not see anything. She then sees their mother sitting on the opposite side of the bed. Her mother tells Kaylee that they love her and Kevin and instructs her to close her eyes before vanishing. She then looks at the pitch black open closet and hears her mother say, "There's someone here." From the closet, she hears her mother calling out her name, as well as moans of pain and breaking bones. Breaking bones stuff is always scary in movies.
Yeah.
Kaylee returns downstairs and Kevin asks her what happened, only for her to respond with asking Kevin to help move the couch. Kaylee and Kevin then push the couch to block off the hallway from which the voice was calling to her. Kevin falls asleep and the voice calls to Kaylee again. When Kevin wakes up, he calls out for her twice, but she does not reply. Lego bricks, VHS tapes, and other toys and objects are suspended against a wall. The voice calls to Kevin, beckoning him into the basement where he sees Kaylee, who no longer has eyes or a mouth. Very scary.
Very scary. This was a very scary part.
Yes.
I was like, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's freaky. After he returns upstairs, Kevin hears the mysterious voice calling to him again, telling him that it wants to play, as some of the toys in the house begin to disappear. A drawer opens in the kitchen, and Kevin complies with the voice's command that he insert a knife into one of his eyes. Oof, this is also scary. Freaky. Kevin picks up a telephone and calls 911. He whispers to the operator that he was cut with a knife and that he feels sick. The operator tells him to stay on the line and that adults will be on their way to help. The operator then asks why he is whispering, if there is someone else in the room with him, and where he is in the house. Kevin says that he's downstairs and that the doors have disappeared before dropping the phone. The phone turns into a chatter telephone toy, and the voice claims responsibility for it doing so, telling Kevin that it can do anything.
Terrifying, by the way. Also one of the biggest jump scares in the whole movie. This chatter telephone shit. I was like, ah!
It says that Kaylee did not do as it told her. She said that she wanted her parents, so it took away her mouth. It tells Kevin to come upstairs, and he obeys. Holding a flashlight, he finds himself on the ceiling. He walks into a bedroom, which becomes a void. 572 days later, a pile of toys sit in a seemingly endless hallway. A figure is seen sitting on the side of a bed and slowly fades away. Photos of people with missing facial features appear in the darkness. Kevin cries out as blood splatters on the floor, then disappears and spatters repeatedly, and he screams for his mother. Kevin asks if he can watch something happy. A door appears in the darkness and later an indistinct face. The face tells Kevin to go to sleep, and Kevin asks for its name and is met with silence.
And then it does the end.
And that's the end.
And that is an hour and 40 minutes. And that last paragraph of events, that takes place in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I don't even know if I would call them establishing shots.
Waiting? It's a lot of film.
We were talking about this as like a film, and it's more of like just a collection of shots.
But worse than that, because they're the same shots over and over and over.
Right.
And occasionally they just throw a loud ass noise at you.
So this is about the development. Ball recalled, I'd had a nightmare when I was little. I was in my parents' house. My parents were missing and there was a monster and lots of people had shared this exact same dream.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's a pretty
That's the most standard nightmare I've ever heard in my life. I had this dream and it was very scary. And it was sort of like something bad had happened. And I found out that I wasn't the only person who had ever experienced that. And it blew my mind. And I thought, why is nobody talking about these? Yeah, they are. They're called nightmares.
Yes. And
nightmares.
Nightmares.
Nightmares. That's so interesting.
Two wars!
That's so intriguing. A bad dream, you say? A dream that wasn't good?
The inspiration for the film's title came after Ball heard the film's namesake song in the 1958 film Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which reminded him, was reminded of Sharon, Lois, and Brahms' version, which he described as an intrinsic part of his childhood. Ball was drawn to Skinamarink as a film title because of its public domain status.
Yeah.
Same feel, felt.
That's his whole movie. He was drawn to that choice because it was free. I feel like that choice was made a lot in this film.
Sonny did it.
Why did you pick that? Because it was $0. Because
it was $0. The evocativeness of the hard K sounds and its personal relevance to him and many others.
Yeah. Didn't play it, though.
No. He slightly altered the spelling so that young children searching online for the song would not accidentally find the film.
That would be the funniest thing in the whole world. If this guy single-handedly ruined the Skinamarink song that's been around since Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Skinamarink makes use of subtitles for certain lines of dialogue. Ball said, the subtitles do originally appear in the script because I wanted to experiment with them. I've seen it quite a bit in analog horror on the internet. I thought it would be a neat to play with scenes where we could hear people talking, but it was so quiet we could only understand them with subtitles. And then when I got to editing, there were certain scenes where, in retrospect, a scene is originally subtitled, but the way they said something sounded good, so we kept the audio. It was a fun little process.
This guy got nothing but time.
This guy, stop. That's why I'm concerned he's gonna listen to this.
He's got nothing but time.
Oh, wow. So this is a interview with Kyle Edward Ball from Fangoria.com by Stephanie Monahan. So I'm going to start. Sometimes nothing is more frightening than your own home in the dead of night. This is something that Kyle Edward Ball understands intimately.
That's such a dumb thing to say. You know, a lot of people are scared of the dark. And this guy's really scared of the
dark. You know, he's the most scared of the dark.
So he made a movie about being afraid of the dark. Whoa.
His new film, Skinamarink, which opens January 13th, follows two small children who wake up in the middle of the night and discover their parents are missing with all the doors and windows having mysteriously disappeared, the siblings camp out in the living room using the glow of the TV set to keep them company. While waiting for their parents to return, they realize they're not alone. A micro-budget masterpiece shot... sorry, that's mean. I don't mean to be rude. Shot entirely in the filmmaker's own family home, Skinamarink plunges the viewer into its young protagonist's vulnerable, dreamlike perspective. The hallways and bedrooms are shot from low angles, transforming a conventional space into something foreign and disturbing, and familiar children's toys becoming threatening totems. Shot digitally in low light, everything is ensconced in grainy static, an atmosphere that makes Skinamarink feel like a cursed object, something you may stumble upon late at night on the internet that you're not supposed to see. It's no wonder the film has become a viral sensation, a nightmare that horror fans dare one another to watch.
Okay, calm down. Second of all, this feels like something I wish I had stumbled across on the internet. If I had stumbled across this on the internet and it was 30 minutes long, I would be sharing it with every single person I know.
Oh my God, I wish this movie were 30 to 40 minutes long.
But it's not. Mm. If everything that happened in this movie happened in 30 minutes and like there was a touch more that happened, I would literally share this with every single person I've ever met. But you have to pay money for it and it's long as shit. And if you look at your phone, you're going to miss half the movie.
He talks about like some of his influences, like Wavelength by Michael Snow, but most one of my new favorite movies that I saw recently that I am just obsessed with, obviously he talks about like Stanley Kubrick as one of his influences, David Lynch, but Black Christmas, he said, has a lot of shots where there's just panning. I would refer to it when talking with my director of photography who hadn't seen Black Christmas. This is my Black Christmas shot. There's one shot towards the end of the movie that's based on the end pullout shot from Solaris by Tarkovsky. I don't know. Anyway, it's this guy. I don't know.
I'll give it to him. Again, like, I can't express this enough that, yes, if the goal of this is to be atmospheric horror and to just encapsulate childhood primal fear, like the fear of being little mm-hmm. and being afraid of something and making yourself more afraid of the thing than the thing actually
is. By focusing on it.
I'll give him that. Yes, I do think that this is an interesting exercise in that, and I think it's good. Do I think that this is anything that anyone is going to enjoy watching, like, truly? Like, this is the kind of thing that, like, maybe would be worthwhile for a couple of reasons. Like, number one, as an experiment in attention spans.
Right.
And number two, as an experiment in how much can an audience freak themselves out if you give them just nothing but, like, hard to hear and see things.
Right.
Like, how much could people... But I don't know. I could also get a group of 30 people, put them in a cave for 5 hours and see what happens. And that's essentially all it is.
Just a little shorter than that.
Just shorter.
But it should be shorter than it is.
I could do the exact same thing by putting people, again, in the bathroom and not letting them talk. Or putting them in a cave where they can't see anything.
It's just depriving you of, like, stimuli.
Depriving you of stimuli for long enough will produce something kind of scary and disturbing.
And when something does happen.
Yeah, especially if you underlay that with already priming us for fear, of course you're going to get a reaction. All the critical reviews of this that are good are more about what the critic can conjure up in their own mind than what the movie actually conjures. The movie does basically nothing scary at all that hasn't been done in every other horror movie.
Absolutely, like floating objects, things disappearing,
loud noises, demon voice, little kids.
Also, you talked about like how there's no one credited for like the demon voice, so
yeah,
it's like
I'm pretty
just
sure
the
mom and the dad.
The mom and the dad laid like laid over each other. Yeah,
like okay. All of that's been done, and the scariest part of this movie is what I can come up with in my own brain while I look in the shadows. But I could just do that at home.
I could just go to my bathroom and do that.
I just go to my bathroom. I've done that. I've done it many times. And this is the same as that. But somebody paid $15,000 to make it.
Make your little movie.
And it's on Shudder.
And it made $2 million.
I don't know. Like, to me, that's... I think the reason people are so mixed on this is because people scare themselves and then give the movie credit for scaring them.
Right. It's really just creating an environment for you to make yourself scared.
Is why they call it atmospheric horror.
I guess.
But, and okay, this guy, he has a YouTube channel, Bite Size Nightmares. I don't know what it's at now, subscriber-wise, but on January 13th, 2023, it was at about 7,000 subscribers when I looked him up.
Aw.
That's not a lot of subscribers.
Not that we have a lot of subscribers.
Not that we do either. I'm not one to judge anyone's amount of subscribers.
But I'm just saying objectively.
Objectively, that's not a ton of subscribers. Yeah. Not really enough that I give him a movie. And what he did is he, like they said, people sent in nightmares that they had had, and then he would create videos surrounding those nightmares. He also made ASMR horror. And that's all this movie is. This movie is like, he had a bad dream one time where something bad happened, and he made a film of it and then put his ASMR horror track over it. Like, I guess, like, he's good at that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, this feels similar to when you look up, like, 12 hours of scary haunted house ambient sound.
Right, yeah. It's really just, like...
But if instead of, like, them having a stock photo of a haunted house on the video, they just had footage of a black room with static and, like, film grain added, and then you watched that, and you were like... and you projected that on your TV and turned off all the lights.
Ooh, a movie night.
Yeah, and then you invited your friends over to watch a movie, and you watched that, and your friends were like, what the fuck? Never call us again.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie is just... I really wish I had watched it in theaters, though, because, like, I feel like I missed a lot of its, I guess, redeeming qualities.
I don't know if you did. Here's my point is, like, I think the scariest part of this movie is just, like, the general feeling of overall, like, dread that exists mm-hmm. within it. Again, I think that's more about us than this guy, but I guess good for him for tapping in on it.
Right.
And, like, you watch it, you do get this, like, overwhelming feeling of dread, and I bet that is a little bit more intensified in the theaters. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, you don't get the experience of being alone when it happens.
Yeah.
So being alone, I could see that working. If I watch this on, like, a laptop under my covers, I might... That probably is actually the... With headphones.
Right.
I think that's probably the best way to watch this movie.
I would agree. Yeah, just, just, like, totally...
The reason this really popped off on TikTok is because people were watching it on their iPhone
it's at 2
a.m.
It's so true. And people were just in that headspace that and they were wanting, like, to scare... They were so scaring scary. Themselves.
This is so scary. And you're like, isn't it so scary? Because if I watched this at 1 p.m., I don't think I'd be affected at all. I think I would... And honestly, before Jane watched this movie, I literally said, like, you can't touch your phone during this
film. It was hard.
Because if you look at your phone... This movie's experience is officially ruined. Like, it's already holding on by a thread.
Oof.
And that's something else where it's like, this is a movie where all I wanted to do was look at my phone.
Right.
And I couldn't, because if I did, it would have made the movie, it would have ruined the movie.
Right. But isn't that kind of a bad sign, I guess?
No. If I had to stare at paint dry for an hour and I wanted to look at my phone, that makes sense.
No, I mean a bad sign for the movie.
Oh, yes. Absolutely a bad sign for the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, a bad sign for my attention span?
No, for the movie. Bad sign for the movie.
Yes, a very bad sign. A very bad sign. I just think the reason that, like, critics like this is because... because critics are pricks. And they're... obsessed with seeming smart.
Ooh, it's very experimental.
Yeah, they're like, wow, I've never seen anything like this.
And it's like,
yeah.
Maybe.
Because anyone that ever did make something like this was like, I can't put this out. This is trash.
Maybe there's a reason for that.
And everyone that watches it that's a person is like, this is fucking horrible.
It's creative. It is.
But
even people on here who give the movie, like, 5 stars are like, it's not good. Or even some people who give it like 9 are like, yeah, I see why people don't like it.
Yeah, it's just like, it, being creative is a good thing, but does it automatically mean that your work has value? No.
Oof.
I would say no. I could, I don't know. That's like the guy that makes that bug art on TikTok. And I actually like his bug art. He plays that little song. It's like, you don't have to like my bug art.
Oh, no. Your algorithm is different than mine.
Well, you should look up bug art. He makes good stuff. He prints off these coloring pages of bugs.
Oh.
And he colors them with crayon.
All right.
And then he, like, laminates them, and he, like, traces over them and, like, trashes them. Okay? And then he goes and puts them in random places in, like, New York City.
Oh.
And people can just find them. And that's how he makes and distributes his art.
Oh.
And people always go, like, this is fucking stupid. Your art looks like shit. And also, that's a coloring page.
Oh, no.
And they're right. But I actually do find some value in his bug art. Because it's just silly little art. And the fact that it makes people so mad, I think that that is a good artistic thing that's happening.
Anger is an emotion that can be elicited by art, too.
To me, it's like a bug coloring page with, like, stickers on it, and you're getting that upset. That's art. The, like, the silly funness mixed with how mad it makes people just when people are being silly and fun. That's commentary. But when I look at, like, something like this, and then people are getting mad, and people are like, well, you're just, boy, your attention span's bad, or, like, you just don't understand that it's about primal atmospheric
turning
horror.
It into a dig on you.
You don't understand it's about primal atmospheric horror, and it's like, no, I got that.
I get it, but it's
I wanted to watch a movie. You know, movies?
A plot?
With stories to be told, and to scare me, and to transport me to another world. I was keenly aware of how long I was in that theater.
I did not lose time at all.
The time did not fly. So, yeah.
I think this person's experience at the theater was pretty funny. This is a review.
Well, Jane's doing the review today.
Yeah.
I'm not doing the review.
Yeah.
So should we give our thoughts?
Oh, good call. Good call.
Now, this is not an IMDb review. That's our usual.
Yeah.
But today we're doing Letterboxd.
Yeah. I have several Letterboxd reviews.
A little shorter. And Letterboxd only goes out of 5?
Yes.
So should we rank out of 5?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm thinking. I think I would give it a 2.
I think I give it a 2.5. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. I think so.
Here's what I'll say about this. I will never recommend this to a single person. Ever. But if I know someone who's a big fan of horror, like, big fan. Now, I'm not talking likes Hereditary.
Yeah.
I'm talking, like, wants to watch some weird shit.
Wants to watch some stuff that is not really that redeemable or fulfilling.
Yeah, and is prepared to sit through this journey. I'm going to tell them what to expect. First of all, I'm going to temper their expectations. And then I'm going to say, but you should watch it. Because I do think that this movie has some intrinsic value to the horror community.
Mm-hmm.
And in general to the film community. Because I think this is a really good example of how a lot of talent can be misused. And now a lot of really interesting, creative, strong decisions can also not be good ones.
Mm. This is a modern day film Icarus story.
Too close to the sun, baby.
Mm.
Too close to the sun. There are a lot of movies that I've watched where, you know, I've said, I didn't like that movie. But I think it was important that I watched it.
Right, right.
I think, for me, don't fucking come at me. 2001 A Space Odyssey was that movie. I didn't enjoy watching that movie at all.
It's tedious.
It's tedious. I don't really care for most of it. The only interesting thing is the robot thing. That's very small amount of the movie. But it was important that I watched it because now I understand things that I didn't understand before.
Yes, it gives you a little bit more context for film in general.
Yeah. And I think that this movie, I can see that there, I can see other horror creators watching this movie and pulling things from it.
Yes, absolutely.
I can see this movie being influential without being a good movie.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad that I watched it because I'm interested to see in the next 5 or 6 years if I start seeing certain things pulled out of this.
Yeah, certain techniques.
Mm-hmm. And just certain kind of like a certain style of filming that I think a lot of people are calling this like the modern Blair Witch.
Yeah.
And I think it's because this style of filming where things are not always so easy to see and it's very mm-hmm. shaky cam. That really has not been popular for a while because right. it got so overused.
Especially, like, so dark as well.
Yeah, it really was overused. And Blair Witch obviously created the, like, found footage shaky cam horror genre.
Absolutely.
But I think that this is creating kind of a TikTokable horror.
Mm.
Where you have this sort of film that is better on the phone, almost. And is better in a very, like, the most isolated you could be to watch this, the better this film probably is going to be.
Absolutely, yeah, because you're channeling that isolation that's in the movie.
If you could watch this in VR, that would be the best experience ever.
That'd be pretty scary.
It would be really scary if you could watch this in VR. Like, I'd probably pee my pants when I watch this. I'm going to be honest. But I can really see people finding that very palatable and putting that into a good movie. Like,
yes.
I think this could signal a big transition for the horror genre. Though, I think we're also fighting against a really strong horror era that we're in right now.
Absolutely. I mean, we have been in a very strong horror renaissance in the last couple of years.
And I think that it's not at all going in this direction.
Yeah.
This feels, it's either too early or too late.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's either too early for this movie, this style of filmmaking mm-hmm. to catch on right now, or it needed to be happening in Paranormal Activity time.
Yeah. Where does this movie belong in time?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't feel like this movie. We're just not sick of the style of camera work that we're getting in other horror movies mm-hmm. right now, I don't think. Like, we're not looking for a switch up of the videography style of horror movies right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the shaky cam thing just kind of got tired.
Yeah, people got really tired of it, for sure.
It's something that you can really only handle in moderation.
Absolutely.
It's sickening for some people, literally.
Yes. So I have a few reviews from Letterboxd. They're short. This one's fun. Unique movie. This is 2 stars. Unique movie. Didn't like it for pretty unique reasons? However, 3/4 packed AMC theater on a Saturday night in the middle of an atmospheric river, assuming horror, complete with a few straight up walkouts and a collective what the fuck laugh after the end title card. Movies are fucking back.
Movies are fucking back. Thank you, Skinamarink.
4 stars. What Jaws did to swimming in the ocean, Skinamarink did to midnight potty trips.
It's true.
No rating. Was bored AF and horny, unrelated. All right. 1.5 stars. Scariest door jams compilation 100 minute loop.
See? Do you see? This corner is really interesting.
And last one, 1.5 stars. Quite boring. I recommend watching it with Family Guy clips playing on a second screen.
Yeah. It's almost like not watching a movie at that point.
Yeah, it's almost like just having a...
It's like watching a scariest door jam.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it would register in your brain as.
Like,
and you'd be like, oh, did something happen? Peter was making a joke.
I didn't get the phone stuff.
Well,
Mr. Ball,
if you're listening to this, I'm sorry we railed on you so hard.
Yeah, but
if you've made it this far in and you haven't clicked out yet.
Well, if you've made it this far, didn't you kind of like it?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and just say, as a person who made it all the way through his movie, no.
That does not mean I'm into it.
It does not mean I liked it. And I respected the craft. Sorry I railed on you so hard. It's all in jest. And I.
Yeah, we're all good buddies.
Come on, Kyle. I saw that picture of that monster. don't pretend like you're better than me.
We're on the same level, you and I.
Yeah, at least. And I hope you keep making films.
Do it.
You hire a writer and that you interpret their work. I think you could be great at that.
You have very good instincts for what's scary.
Great instincts for what's scary. Less good instincts for how to write a movie.
And how to film a movie.
Yes. Yep. But now you have $2 million.
So make a movie.
Make it happen. I'll watch this guy's next movie.
Yeah, either way, I'm going to watch it.
I'm going to watch it no matter what.
We're hooked,
you
Mr. Ball.
You could stop me from watching the next movie. So I'm excited. I hope you're having fun at Darkfest 2023.
Oh my god, we're not stalkers.
You and your 13 friends.
Oh no.
No. Listen, we've all had flops.
That's true.
You know, I've flopped, we've flopped.
Yeah.
So many times.
To say the least.
I can't, I know it sounds like I'm shitting on this guy. And if for some reason this guy gets famous, and this is out there. Sorry.
We're going to get canceled for what
cancel
we said about him.
Cancel me, bitch.
Cancel me. I dare you.
He's a fucking white guy from Alberta, Canada.
I think I'm safe.
I think I got it in the bag on this one. Wearing a snapback and drinking a monster in his
pocket. Oh, no. Yeah, right. We found those photos.
You know what? Everyone can shut up. I'm not getting canceled. Fine. You win with your gay shit. I'm not woke. For in the future, when we've all forgotten what that sound bite is from, that's a TikTok sound bite from Family Guy. In case we're looking to cancel me 10 years in the future.
Will that even be a thing 10 years in the future?
Will the Earth even exist 10 years in the future?
That's the question.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Stay tuned to find out.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening.
All right.
Bye. Bye.